We're live
on YouTube. What's up? It's the Tom and Z evening rounds.
We may have already been kind of live.
Have we been live? I don't see.
Are we live?
I don't see. How come I don't see my video? Oh, there it is. Yeah, there we go.
Oh, I see it.
Hamid Saeed says hi. Hamid.
How are you? My boy.
My boy. The Saeed.
That's right.
Hamid Saeed.
Hey. Can we talk about something?
I got hoes on different area codes.
I missed you, my guy.
I missed you too, man.
I feel like we won't get to hang out as much.
You know what? Ever since I moved, it hasn't been the same. They said long-distance relationships could work, Tom Heiner, but they lied.
It's painful.
It is painful.
You know?
But you know, as a great man once said, life is pain, princess.
Mm.
I don't know who that great man was.
I don't know that reference.
But it's a Princess Bride. I thought you were a child of the 90s.
The Princess Bride sucks. And
okay, that's racist.
I refuse to watch it.
It's so racist because it had Andre the Giant in it.
Here are some movies I won't watch. The Princess Bride. Mm-hmm. Romancing the Stone.
Okay.
What was that one? The Revenant with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, with the bear?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Those are really the only three.
I want to give a shout out to... to the new Z-Pack supporters on YouTube. They're showing up with green badges. Ashley Stewart, Don Pulliam, Tony Frank, Ronald Stokes, Rhonda Fenby Morse. What are you moving that from?
Hey.
Logan.
He moved some stuff.
Okay,
man.
Guys, let's be honest. Do I do this better myself? I do this better myself, don't you think? Should we fire Logan? Except he's so adorable. We can't. We just can't do it.
Callie wants to know which is better for you as creators, Facebook or YouTube.
Oh, what a great question. Let's go.
First of all, don't call me creators.
A, we're influencers.
I don't like it, okay? How do you feel about the word influencer?
I
feel like
I
hate that
word. It's the worst word ever.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah, I am an influencer. I have several Starbucks gift certificates.
A lot of you have been asking me about my skincare routine. Okay, swipe up, promo code my skincare routine. Like, that's what I think of as an influencer. I think of, like, girls selling skinny tea on Instagram.
Yeah. You know
what
would be?
I don't think of what we do trying to change, talking about healthcare systems reform as influencer.
It's the equivalent, like, sort of kind of cognitive dissonance of like somebody with like early full blown acquired immune deficiency syndrome in the 80s becoming famous as an influencer to tell people about getting, you know, having this horrible disease. Like, that would be a real influencer, right? Like, that, wow.
You can just say his name. His name was Magic Johnson.
You're right.
And he was a great man.
He's still alive.
He's still alive. Sorry.
You know,
they really cured him, you know?
You know,
I think we've basically beaten AIDS.
I think the answer's not, but I think that rich people have beaten AIDS.
Can you explain this to me honestly as somebody who lived through the AIDS epidemic, as to me, somebody who did not live through the AIDS epidemic.
You died in the AIDS
what
epidemic.
What I have heard from people that lived through the AIDS epidemic was that it was like a zombie apocalypse. Like, people, like, once Magic Johnson got it, people thought people were just going to start dropping like flies.
Yeah.
Because they were like, how did Magic Johnson get it? You know?
I was there, Gandalf, in the 90s, like in San Francisco General, and seeing young gay men dying of this disease. And not only that, but like, it was a socioeconomic equalizer in those days, because it didn't matter whether you're rich or poor, you could still really get sick of really weird opportunistic infections. But then later it became more a disease of neglect because you couldn't afford the medication, or you had bad, you know, mental illness, poor compliance with these very complicated drug regimens. So, you know, it'd be like this homeless guy in the middle of the night, 1995 or six or something, and spiking high temperatures, and they call the student in to draw the blood because that's how you learn. And the nurses at San Francisco General don't draw blood in the middle of the night. So it has to be the doctors. And so, and it's good because that's a great learning environment. The problem was, like, there I am. I don't know. I'm still like learning to draw blood. I'm shaking. This guy's like delirious. He's got a temperature of 104, which means that his blood is swarming with HIV virions. And I'm just like, I'm going to die today. Like,
yeah.
The black helicopters have come, Logan. I knew it. Anytime Logan shows up, the helicopters follow.
Wait, so what was protocol like when you were going to like a AIDS infested, like full blown AIDS infested patient's room?
There wasn't much of a protocol.
So it's just you being like real scared.
It would be
like
contact precautions.
Like,
yeah, contact precautions. You wear a mask, you wear a gown, you wear gloves. And a lot of times it was just gloves. And the truth is, we were all terrified.
Yeah.
Because it was, like you said, in those days, it still had the stigma of being a death sentence. And, you know, if you got a needle stick or something happened, you could die.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I don't think many of us went into medicine. We wanted to help people. We wanted to sacrifice a lot, but we didn't want to sacrifice our lives.
Right.
So that was an interesting thing. I mean, unless you go work for like Doctors Without Borders or something.
What was the feeling like between you and the patient, like when you would go in for the stick?
You know, I don't think, see, a lot of the times it was either a patient who was so deliriously ill with something that no one had any experience treating because it was an infectious disease that had never been seen in immunonormative patients, right? So, you know, you're dealing with something that you're like, wait, toxo can do this, or just something crazy. Yeah. So there was this like sense of the unknown, like what's going on? And but at San Francisco General, there was a sense of like this vibrant energy, like the whole place seemed to exist to solve this problem. Mm. Like here you are in the, you know, you remember in in that Lord of the Rings movie, like one of the elves tells like Bilbo or something, welcome to the heart of Elvendom upon earth. When you walk into San Francisco General, it was like, welcome to the heart of figuring out the AIDS epidemic, right? Yeah. Because this is its ground zero.
Ground zero, yeah. And, Castro district.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was really, because we had to do home visits too.
Yeah.
And so we would go, and it was almost always somebody who's HIV positive, living with it, struggling with it. And they would have interesting complications like early onset atherosclerosis, which was something they were starting to figure out. There's something having to do with the inflammatory stuff. We couldn't figure it out, but these patients were getting atherosclerotic disease. It's interesting too, because it taught me a lot. Like here I am, I'm this kid from Clovis, California. Like it's one of the most conservative places in California. Mm-hmm. And of course I fancy myself as like liberal. I'm gonna go to UCSF. I'm the most liberal kid on the block, right? Yeah. No, I was by far the most
deeply conservative roots. Yeah.
Coming from this place, it still like San Francisco took me by shock. I was just like, oh my gosh, there's like guys holding hands and there's all this stuff going on. And it took like a good like few months to really, and I went to Berkeley, and Berkeley didn't even have that level of stuff going on in terms of just the over the topness of it to somebody who'd never seen it. So I was still adjusting to all this, and then in you go into this HIV epidemic that was just going crazy. And so at the time, I remember going to these guys' house and seeing this human being in their home. And see, it's one thing to see somebody in the hospital because you're like, I don't know anything about this person. They're a gown, they're a problem to be solved. That's how it feels, especially when you're in training. And then you go in their house and you see them sitting there very politely. They're really happy to have the attention of a medical student and be part of this training. And you're deeply moved by the whole thing. And you're like, wow, this is like, this guy's almost more human than me because he's dealing with this thing that this Damocles sword over his head, yet he's got the patience and the time to come have a medical student into his home. And I remember that was when I suddenly woke up and was like, I don't understand how anyone can judge somebody based on their sexual orientation. It makes no sense to me. These are human beings like us. And this was in a period when it was still like, you know, there was still like open homophobia and all this other stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it was a great experience for me. And I think illustrative. And so now the problem is now I struggle with, well, that should be the default. Why are we constantly censoring our speech and doing all these other things and making people feel different in that way when we ought to just be treating everyone like human beings, right? You and I have had this discussion.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Well, it's interesting too, because, you know, back in the day, San Francisco used to be the place that like you were from a repressive Midwestern household and you were a gay man and you knew you were a gay man and you would come to San Francisco to live as a gay man.
As a gay man, right.
And your family back in your family back in the Midwest would have some version of the story that was different. You know, they'd be like, Johnny works out doing boat work, you know, at the shipping
American
yards.
American Beauty stuff.
Yeah, whatever, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, does he have a wife yet? No, you know, he failed relationships, you know, that kind of thing. And people would just kind of sweep it under the rug. And wasn't there like, there was a presidential assassination attempt, right? Here at some point, and was it on Reagan or was it on Carter? I can't remember the story, but somebody, I remember the guy who foiled the attempt. There's a woman with a funny name who tried to kill the president.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Right.
What was her name?
Oh, I'm trying to remember. It was like Squeaky something weird.
It wasn't Squeaky Frog.
Right. But it was something like somebody, something crazy.
But anyway, the guy who foiled the attempt was a gay man.
Ah.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
And that was, you know, what his story was. He had come out here from wherever and, you know, he was living his life. And then when the attention started getting foisted upon him because he's a hero. He saved his family back home started to like learn what was going on out here. So it was sort of interesting.
You don't want to be outed that way.
Right. This was back in the time when we had, you know, it's always interesting. Like, why would somebody care about somebody's sexual orientation?
Right.
Like whatever you do, whatever you and another consenting adult does.
Right.
What does it matter?
What does it matter? Right.
No, here's the thing. I got every right to think it's hilarious. you know? Like, that's something that you can do. But, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Like, if you told me, you were like, hey, Tom, here's my thing. I like to get tied up, and then I have my wife put peanut butter in my butthole. I would be like, that's hilarious.
I think the...
But I wouldn't begrudge your right to
right,
do it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I think being able to laugh at someone's sexual fetishes is a God-given right.
It is.
As long as you still respect them as a human being.
You have to respect
right.
them as a human
because,
being.
Because, I mean...
And vote for their right to do those
exactly right.
things, whatever they are.
For example, yeah. Logan likes toes.
This is known.
I have no evidence of this, but this is known, right? It's like consciousness is self-aware. Logan likes toes. He's got a toe fetish.
Don't you think this is a generational thing as well? Because even the conservatives I know in my generation are like, oh yeah, gay people. Let them be.
I think there is a component of that. You know? I think it's a waking up, unfolding to the possibility that what you thought was the only way to be in the world is not.
Yeah.
Yeah. And right. and that's true. So, liberals have sort of taken this word progressive. I think real progress is a natural outgrowth of human society. It happens.
Well, don't you think it's a dearth of progress to be overly progressive?
Well,
to continue to progress past the point of sanity.
I think what we're seeing is the end stage of that wave of progressivism, where now it just becomes a parody of itself.
Yes.
And even intellectual liberals are looking at it going, these people are crazy, like something's gone wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like we've gone off the rails. Like people like Sam Harris, who's an intellectual liberal, looks at the far left and their behavior on things like cancel culture and call out culture and all this nonsense, and they go, this is just dumb. And the way that academic society is being suppressed, and you know, you have people being deplatformed. No, the idea of college is you have people that you disagree with show up and you debate them.
Yeah.
You hear these ideas and you're challenged by ideas that offend or disgust you.
This is a weird place.
Mm.
Why is San Francisco so weird? Why is the Bay Area so weird? What is
it
about this place?
Roots of it.
Because all of this happens here.
It's true.
I was thinking about this as I was flying into the Harvey Milk terminal today.
Right.
You know,
Harvey Milk is like...
And I couldn't buy a fucking bottle of water because you can only buy water in a cardboard box. And I was like, thanks, progressive America.
Hey man, we're right next to the bay, okay? At any point that
but
that...
What, there's something about San Francisco. I mean, the gold rush, Silicon Valley, all these crazy progressive ideas, gay culture, like you know, the techno oligopolies that we deal with today, like all this weird mix of, is this like what a libertarian state would be like? Is this what like a free state would look like, you know?
It's a good question. I think it's a combination of like people want to be here because it's got great weather. So you attract, you know, the affluent elite.
Yes.
Then you have proximity to Asia. So you have a lot of immigration from cultures that sort of value things like math and engineering and those kind of things. And so you have all of that. Then you have the university culture that sprang up with Stanford and Berkeley, UCSF, and these big institutions here. And you have a very tight urban density where people exchange ideas. And then you have the 60s, which it just so happened kind of you have this waking up with psychedelics and stuff in this area. So to this day, there's a spirituality epicenter in the Bay Area.
That story
underpins everything.
That 60s story gets told in with rose-colored glasses on.
Oh, well, right? 1,000%.
Because it was just a bunch of dirty kids doing speed. And it was a bunch of drug addicts that had come here to do speed and take LSD.
That's probably conservative revisionist history.
Not really, because I've talked to the people that were living here at the time. Like my mother has all these stories about it.
Right. But they're, you know.
She hated it.
Yeah.
Everybody that was living here at the time hated it.
Well, no. Well, let's put it this way. I think working class people who lived here that weren't part of this counterculture movement must have hated it.
Yeah.
Because it's...
Which was most people back then. Most people were from working
majority,
class
neighborhoods. The counterculture is named counter for a reason. It's not the mainstream culture.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
We kind of... I think it's true. We paint the 60s as this thing.
Yeah.
But really, most people were like... You know, nuclear families living at home, not doing acid, and...
Well, the 60s started as like an elite liberal thing, too. Like with, you know, Timothy Leary came out of Harvard, and that was where it all stemmed from the universities, right?
Strain of intellectualism.
Yeah, but then when you tell the world to get on drugs, things go bad. Like, of course they do.
You know, the problem with Leary, and this is a thing, so this was in that Michael Pollan book, too, talked about it quite a bit. He was he was genuinely the wrong ambassador
yes.
for the potential of psychedelics, because he's saying, go and do them for fun with your friends. Everyone should do them.
Yeah.
And I think his idea, at least in retrospect, what he was saying is he told people, well, if enough people do this drug, there'll be enough people waking up to, you know, expanding their consciousness and going, oh, okay, the world can be a better place. But what ended up happening was the drug got terribly stigmatized because people had bad experiences because mm-hmm. set and setting matter when using yeah. high dose psychedelics. So now we're set back, you know, 30 years from the promise of these medications used under guided circumstances. And psychiatry as it is struggles with reductionist models.
It's interesting because as a person who's like sort of, you know, somewhat at some time psychonaut, like, which is a phrase meaning I do psychedelic drugs.
That's like influencer.
Yeah.
I'm a psychonaut.
I've always thought in my mind, wouldn't it be great to go back to like pre-1967, like the early 60s,
yeah.
and when LSD was legal in America and there was no cultural baggage or stigma, and do LSD at that point in time? Because it seems like you'd have a very clean, clear trip, you know?
Well, it's interesting. So the earliest trips were people who, again, there was no psychological expectation. So the guy who discovered it, Hoffman, right, was mm-hmm. like, he just accidentally spilled it. I forget what the story was, but
it was he rode his bicycle home right. after he invented it in the lab on accident.
Right.
It soaked into his fingers.
Something
then
like
he
that.
Rode his bicycle home and, you know, tripped out.
Tripped like, out.
Pretty hardcore.
And the trip that he described.
Thought he was dying.
Yeah. Right. Is ego death and all that. I mean, he had everything. And there was no baggage. I actually think, and Sam Harris said this recently when he was, oh my God, you guys, if you haven't heard this episode, you would love this.
Yeah.
So you know Richard Dawkins?
Yeah.
Famous evolutionary hardcore atheist.
Yeah. He invented the word meme for people who don't know.
The word meme. And actually, they talked about that. And he's really pissed that it's been hijacked by stupid pictures.
Fuck him.
Yeah. Fuck him too. Because it's a meme. Fuck Richard Dawkins is the new meme. So Dawkins and Harris go way back to the early days of like the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. Him, Dan Dennett, Christopher Hitchens. And were the new atheists, these intellectual atheists. So he's interviewing Hawkins or for like the 27th, Dawkins for like the 27th time or whatever. So they're like, let's just go deep on some shit. Okay, let's talk about memes, talk about this.
Yeah.
So at one point then, Dawkins asks Harris about psychedelics, because Harris has experience with psychedelics and he's never done them.
Yeah, this is interesting. The reason he asked Harris is because Dawkins had been on Rogan's show.
That's right.
Before this interview.
That's right.
And Rogan was bullying Dawkins about never having done psychedelics.
That's right. And he deserves to be bullied. So this is what ended up happening. Because listen, the first time when I did acid in college, I had an experience where I said, oh.
Yeah.
There's a sense of revealed truth.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, this is what the people who have done this have experienced. And now I understand that. And the people who've never done it are missing a major portal into a way the mind can be, that it's really a shame that they're missing.
Yeah.
Assuming they have a good trip. And that's the problem. You can't assume that. So Harris tells Dawkins, like, this is the thing. This is what psychedelics are like. This is why they're important. They show you a way the mind can be. And that then allows you to approach things like meditation with a passion, because you go, oh, I see what can be possible. I see why. Let's go and try to do it without drugs that can give you all these bad untoward consequences. So Dawkins is just like, well, Sam, you're very convincing about this. I mean, it sounds like I want to try this, but he's like, well, this is how you should do it, this and that. So then he goes, okay, let me take you through a meditation, see if that's maybe something. So Sam does this guided 5-minute meditation with Dawkins. Dawkins is silent the whole time, eyes closed, and Sam's going through his shtick that I've done via his app, and I know exactly what he's doing. And
yeah.
I'm like, oh, yeah. Dawkins opens his eyes at the end and goes, so what did you think? What do you think of that? And Dawkins effectively said, that was so boring. It was a waste of time. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you can do that on retreat. I just don't get it. And it was fascinating. This is one of the smartest people around, right? And it didn't surprise me at all.
Well, this is why people need LSD
exactly.
or DMT or psilocybin mushrooms, is because I used to be a person like Dawkins too.
Me too.
And then, you know, you can't fake it when LSD hits you.
Yeah, it's real.
It's like, boom. We're going to the fucking top of the mountain right now.
Exactly.
And you can't pretend like you're not having a profound experience. You're having a profound experience.
Yeah, exactly. The way Harris describes it is like, meditation is like, a boat and you're hoisting a sail. You might catch a wind. You might go somewhere. It's going to be hard work. You have to know how to sail. It's going to take practice. LSD is like strapping yourself to a rocket ship. Yeah. You're going to go somewhere. You don't know where it is, but it's going to be somewhere different, and it's going to be somewhere alien.
Yes.
and that's exactly correct. And so Dawkins, it was really interesting because Harris really put his all into this, and Dawkins was just not having any of it.
And Dawkins probably made up his mind at the beginning of the conversation that how he was going to respond.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he'd be like, how funny would it be if I was just like, I don't feel anything, Sam.
I actually think he's actually being honest. I think that it's very easy when you're, especially when you're a skeptic and a hardcore intellectual, you're used to thinking all day. And meditation is about observing your thinking, not thinking about thinking.
Right.
And I think that's where, and Harris said this as much. So it was really fascinating.
I have a very hard time with this myself, like in terms of meditation, because I was telling Logan on the plane on the way here, like, I don't really...
That's Logan right there, by the way. Logan, say hi to everyone. It's been a minute. There he is.
I don't really... For me, I don't love to like go out and do things that are what I consider distractions. Mm. So like I consider basically everything a distraction. Mm. You know, traveling is a distraction. Going to like a little... Like Logan went to an air show the other day. I was like, that's a distraction.
You know what's a distraction? Dizzy Miss Lizzie just joined the Super PAC subscribers on YouTube. Way, Dizzy Miss Lizzie! Ooh. Back to you, Tom.
So my point is I always have like a thought I'm turning over in my mind always. And sometimes these thoughts can persist for months, right? Mm. And if I'm at an air show or something or I'm at a wherever, I'm just like, oh, some planes are flying around. Anyway, back to the nature of consciousness. I wonder why. So I don't like having, if I feel like there's no respite, like I haven't conquered this thought or like, what's the way to put it? If I haven't figured out the thing I'm trying to figure out, then I can't stop working on the problem. Because I have like that scientist model of the world where like I want the truth. And if I haven't figured out this piece of truth that I'm working on, I cannot rest to meditate. It does not feel good to rest to meditate.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
It's hard.
I think also you're still young and your mind is going a billion miles an hour.
Yeah.
I think when I was your age, I would have had a real hard time meditating. You know, it's interesting. So this morning I woke up a little early with, you know, that feeling of anxiety?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know it well. I know it well too. We both suffer from it a little bit. Yeah. It's intermittent now with me. It's not constant. So when I was younger, it was constant. Like go to med school, pits wet, scared all the time.
Yeah.
This feeling. It's like a little person in your chest, like a little hummingbird that's just like,
yeah,
look at me, something's wrong. And so I woke up with that this morning and I approached it with some meditative equanimity where I said, oh, this is interesting. I'm curious about this. Let me approach this sensation with curiosity, because that's what it is, a sensation arising. You can get lost in that and go, this is me. Or you can go, oh, this is occurring within me.
Yeah.
I am feeling this. I am aware of this. This is welcome, actually. Let me see what this is. And I started examining it and feeling it and seeing what it was doing. And I had this weird imaginary conversation with this thing, this little sub-mind that was trying to tell me something. And I'm like, hey, it's okay, man.
Yeah.
You're safe. Like, no one's going to hurt you. No one's going to laugh at you. No one's going to, you know, try to harm you. And you could feel it kind of like, it's still there, but it was no longer a sense of, ooh, something's wrong. I need to do something. It was like, yeah, I have this little guy right now who's, he needs attention.
It's so interesting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's a, what do you think? Did you come to the conclusion of what you were anxious about?
No. I think I can extrapolate that it's, well, you guys are coming in today. We have a lot of stuff to do. Sponsored show later in the day. Right, right. In fact, coming up right after this on Facebook, we'll be doing a thing with Fatuity, which will be great, with a doctor I've never met about a topic I don't know about.
Yeah.
So unconsciously, I'm probably anxious about it. Consciously, I'm like, I do this every day. It's just no big deal.
Yeah. Right?
So I think it's the unconscious part trying to keep you safe, going, worry about this. This should be something you should worry about. And I'm like, bro, we got this. It's cool.
Can I tell you a problem I have is I cannot get over the feeling of, if I get a bill that I didn't know about for like, let's say $300 or something like that, right? Like I can, even though I have the money in the account to pay the bill, existential dread.
Oh, I'm with you. I get the same thing. It's right. Like someone is trying to kill me.
And it does. Yeah, exactly. It's like you got something on your arm.
Right.
And it's going to murder you.
Why is that?
I don't know.
I have the same thing.
I can't stop
it. I got a medical bill for like something that should have been covered.
Yeah.
And I just saw it now. It was only like $80.
Yeah.
And I was like, it was like someone was trying to stab me.
Well, you can end up like ruining your life over perseverating about that.
Right.
You know, you can ruin your whole day.
Oh, yeah.
Just being like, ugh. And then my problem is, I'll procrastinate paying the bill.
Yeah.
So then
it becomes late charges.
It extends that feeling.
Right.
You know? Like, right. So now I'm sitting with that feeling all week instead of I should have just paid it that day.
Right.
Been done with it.
You right, know? Right. Chris Ryan just helped us pay our bills. He's a member of the Super PAC.
Ooh, ooh.
Guys, so by the way, that subscriber thing on YouTube is new. You're part of a brave new world. We already have a bunch of subscribers. We're going to do unique stuff for you guys, but don't worry about it. Right now, we're talking to the whole page, but I love you guys for supporting the show. It makes all this possible without commercial entanglements. Speaking of which, guys, we're going to have to run in a second, aren't we? Because it's 3:16. We got to go check out this new studio space we're exploring for Studio 3.0, because that would be the third version. This is version 2.0. What do you think, Tom Heineber? Are we three?
Ron,
is 3.0? Oh, yeah, you're right.
I want to hit this 4.0. One real quick. Rhonda K says, I have just recently realized I have anxiety. I am one of these people, too.
Me, too.
I did not know I had anxiety. Because if you would have asked me, I'd be like, I'm not anxious, bro.
I'm not
whatever.
Anxious,
right. And then like, you guys would be like, you're anxious, dude.
Yeah.
You're like always talking about stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, I'm just making sure that nothing ever harms me.
No, it's true. Yeah, this morning I remember, and then, so what's interesting, I woke up with this feeling at like 5, which was actually kind of late for me. I was like, oh. So I was already on a better step because yeah. I was like, normally this anxiety would have gotten me up at 2 or 3.
Right.
And I wouldn't have been able to go back to sleep.
It's better that it's 5. Yeah. In fact, you're like, doing good, Zidane.
Yeah.
Doing pretty good.
Yeah, doing pretty good.
I have the same feeling.
Right? You're like, I have some equanimity. Like, I can be curious about this feeling instead of angry or frustrated or upset. Like, dude, my whole night is ruined.
This is so funny. Normally on days I travel, I wake up at like 3 a.m. Yeah. And then I can't get back to sleep.
Yeah.
Today I woke up at 6 a.m. and I was like, you're the fucking man,
yeah.
Tom. Good job sleeping, bro.
Yeah.
Whereas so I know that Logan wakes up 15 minutes before he's got to leave the house every time we travel. Right? See?
Chill Island vibes.
Some of us are just cursed with this anxiety, man.
Yeah, you know, and actually with higher functioning and stuff, so particularly with like gifted kids and stuff,
yeah.
They get really neurotic and anxious. And I remember I did that personality test. I scored really high on neuroticism, OCD, these kind of things associated with a lot more anxiety. So it's yeah. a real thing. So, but the thing is, but the point is, the take home point, I think, as we had to get going soon, is this is manageable without drugs.
Oh.
Without drugs.
Let me tell you, before you reiterate your point about the, you know, listening to your feelings. Which is a very super valid point.
Too pussy for life.
it just sounds judgmental when I say it for some reason. But I recently, just a simple thing you can do to mitigate anxiety, I just cut out caffeine.
Oh.
And oh my God, my sleep is so much better. I have so much less anxiety.
Oh.
I was like realizing like why I'm drinking 400 or 500 milligrams of caffeine every day. This is a central nervous system stimulant that I'm putting in my system all the time. No wonder I'm so anxious all the time. You know?
Doesn't it make you wonder a little bit like... if we believe in conscious agent theory,
yeah,
this icon of caffeine molecule,
right.
Which I've synthesized in organic chemistry as a student. So I've made caffeine from its precursor chemicals.
Yeah.
So I've created this icon, right? What if it's a little conscious agent that's just this little anxious piece of shit that in small doses with the right host makes you a little more woke and a little more, hey, I'm a little bit more on top of things.
Well, isn't that the thing that caffeine does for you is it makes you alert. It doesn't make you not tired.
No.
It makes you alert.
It raises your level of arousal. In other words, your ability to... And that's why physicians love it. Everybody loves it.
Our society runs on caffeine.
But you overdo it. You don't even know what's happening. That little anxiety-ogen is now sticking it right in your fucking nuts.
It's true.
And it's true. Too much... So I took an MCAT class when I was a student. So this was like the Berkeley Review, all right, in Berkeley. This is a homebred class. And I used to sit in the back, and I was an asshole. And one day, I decided I was going to go to Starbucks or something. I never go to Starbucks. I would just get coffee from Strata, one of these little local Berkeleys. And I got this fucking huge thing. And I was sipping it in the back of the class, getting progressively more irritable and wound up. And I started talking to the people next to me, and Dale, the biology teacher who owns the company, started lecturing, and he was lecturing, and he's normally really super mellow, chill island vibes like Logan, right? And I don't know, fuck this. And he goes, Zubin, do you have a problem with what I'm saying? I mean, this is really disruptive what you're doing. And it took me by surprise because I wasn't paying attention. I was just irritable, and I didn't even realize it was the caffeine until I was like, fuck this. And I walked out. It was like 2 days before the MCAT.
Wow.
I walked out with my shit and I left and I didn't come back. And I went home and I'm like, what the fuck just happened? Like, that's not me. I just walked, and Dale's like a smart guy.
Yeah.
I'm paying to be in this class. The MCAT's coming up. What the fuck is wrong with me? Like, high volatility, yeah, but something really off. And it turns out I realized, because it had been repeatable when I'd have large amounts of caffeine, I'd become a raging fucking asshole.
Yeah.
And so we forget these things are drugs. And you know what's the best part of that story? Dale calls me 5 weeks later after the MCAT scores come back, and he's like, yeah, we'd like you to come teach for us. And I was like, didn't we leave on very bad terms? But he recognized that
we were just stressed the fuck out.
Yeah, that kind of, he understood.
He's probably, if he's been teaching MCAT, he's probably seen kids break all the time, you know? Like,
he created this company from scratch. He's a true entrepreneur. Totally. He knows his shit.
Totally. Right?
Game recognized.
So funny too, because this is the hard part about being an adult, is like, if your child wanted to mainline a venti with a quad shot in it, you'd be like, no, bitch, you can't do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? But if you want to do it, you're like, I'm an adult to do what
right.
I want.
That's right.
Nobody can stop me now.
Also speed.
All right, that's the end of the show.
That
fuck
was
off,
a lot of fun.
He's
out. I want to thank the YouTube supporters. He's totally gone. He's going to go shit himself now because of the caffeine. I love you guys. I'll share this one to the supporters on Facebook as well because I love you guys. He's turning off the lights. The lights are now off. I hate you, Tom Heineberg. Roll the credits. We don't have any fucking credits. All right, bye.